This episode of the Sportsman's Empire is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. Since 1952, Interstate Batteries has been evoking compassion and a trustworthy spirit into the surrounding communities. Interstate Batteries is a mission-driven company fueled by purpose and guided by their values. If you need help locating a specific battery, stop into your local Interstate Batteries retail store and speak with a battery specialist. They even offer cell phone repairs. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable. Ladies and gentlemen, this is the How to Hunt Deer podcast. I'm one of the hosts, Dan Johnson. Now, I'm not sure who I'm speaking with as the other host. Are we talking to Jason today, or are we talking to Mr. Thibodeau today?
Well, it's Mr. Jason.
Oh, Mr. So, Jason. They go first names?
Well, I go first name because I don't expect him to say my last name the right way. It's just easier that way. Yeah. So, it's Mr. Jason today. Actually, I think I've got 4 days this week that I'll be Mr. Jason. So
nice.
Yeah.
Molding the youth of America. Do you ever talk about hunting with them at school?
Well, since I've been in this preschool for the last 3 months, not really.
Okay.
I've seen a couple kids where camouflage and stuff like that and tried to have that conversation. But
yeah.
Dan, I'll be honest, like this preschool that I'm going to, I mean, I don't want to say beyond help, but kind of, it's a rough situation.
Okay.
There's 9 half day classes there, and then there's 4 full-time classes there, and it's a rough situation. So I feel like maybe at some point I don't want to say making a difference, but making some friends with some of these little kids.
Oh, nice.
But it's, you could tell they're all from either some troubled background, household or some of that sort, or they all have something. Let's put it that way. Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
Well, maybe you could bring just for 5 minutes, you could bring a shed antler in to class and just be like, this is a deer antler. Who wants to touch it?
Dude, I'd love to. But the problem of it is half these kids run out of the classroom and you don't know what they're going to do.
They're going to use it to hurt somebody.
I would not be surprised. they have literally had to take dodgeballs and stuff and put them up. And I mean, just each kid, if they leave the classroom. Yeah, it's crazy. It is a crazy environment. And we're talking 3, 4, and 5 year olds. So
that's nuts.
It is.
It's almost like before you step in the room, you got to put a mouth guard in to be able to handle the class.
Yeah. It's a mouth guard and there's a lot of masks and stuff that are involved. And I don't know if these teachers and paras are wearing these masks, you know, so they don't get colds or whatever, but yeah. It's a strange environment, but I keep gravitating back towards this one just because, you know, once you get in the system and you know the school and you know the people, you kind of know your role and your expectations. Because I've the town that I'm, or city that I'm closest to right now doing all the subbing, there's probably 10, 12 different schools that I could sub in. And I've been in all of them except for the junior high and the high school. And the only reason I really haven't been in those is because they only have availability like once every 2 or 3 weeks. So
I go where the
jobs are, and it just happens to be this school. And then they ask me at the end of every week, like, hey, what's your plans for next week? Can you come back? And I really could have taken a full-time position at some point, and I just, I won't, but.
Yeah. Yeah. Especially when that landscaping money is probably better than what you're doing here.
The landscape money is itching at the door right now, but now we got to wait for the road postings because of the weather and all that. So I've got a couple weeks, but it works out because we're nearing the end of this house addition. They're supposed to come and mud and tape the drywall tomorrow, which is good. I don't have to mess with that, but then you know that's a process too, because they probably won't finish that until the middle of next week by the time they do the coats. And I'm going to be doing the painting, the trim work, the doors, the flooring, stuff like that, hanging shelves and stuff, you know, so finish it up. So I'll need a couple weeks anyhow. But the biggest dilemma right now seems to be, so we had to search for furniture for our living room, because right now, as I've said, like our bed is right on the other side of here.
Yeah.
And we ordered stuff back in December from a company that had been in business for 98 years. We paid for it. It was supposed to be 5 weeks that it came in. and the place closed its doors. So we're sitting there, you know, $3,000 in furniture that never got delivered. We never got a confirmation that it was in, and there's no way to get a hold of this company. The signs on the door say, call this number and leave a voicemail. You can't even leave a voicemail. There's the news companies in the area have been reporting about it, and they can't go hold of the owners or anything. So that's our dilemma right now.
Awesome. Yes. Dude, you can't even buy furniture anymore without a shit show.
No, like, well,
blows my mind, dude.
That's the thing. It's like you go with what you would think is a reputable company that's been in business that long, and if apparently they were just going to change hands to, you know, the son and daughter or whatever. Mm-hmm. And well, you know how money talks. It must have fell through somewhere because they opened their doors temporarily for a week and then closed them again. And that was just a week or two ago. But I can't get a hold of anybody. So I've sent emails. Yeah. I've tried calling, but. That's our holdup right now. It's furniture, right?
Yeah. Yeah. It's not just furniture, it's money.
Yeah.
You know, and in this economy, dude, money is so important, right? And that's the thing, like, you know, even what I do for a living, I got people who haven't paid me yet. And I'm sure it's the same thing, especially if you're independent. It's awesome going to a job, punching the clock, and more than likely you're going to be getting paid.
Right.
But guys like us, I'm still waiting on quite a bit of money that was supposed to be here January 1 that isn't here. And I'm patient. You know, I have enough money to get me through for, you know, the next 5 or so months. But it's something as an independent, you're always thinking about it. It's just on your shoulder, whispering in your ear. Are you going to make enough money this year? Are you going to make enough money this year?
Yeah, you know, and year in and year out, you know, you like, so I've done this 14, 15 years now, landscaping, and, you know, pretty much year to year, I know exactly what I'll make and everything like that, you know, but you're still playing the cat and mouse game of trying to catch that money. You know, there's people that are always delinquent. There's people that refuse to pay. There's, you know, one of the worst ones is if there's a death in the family, you know, because then the money gets stuck in probate for 6 months and you don't get to see it anyways, you know, so it's, then you got to chase whoever down after that. And it's a bad situation because you don't want to force it knowing that there was a family death, but I don't know. I hear you. I feel your pain with that. That is a tricky slope.
All right, before we get into the rest of whatever we're going to talk about, I honestly don't even know, because hunting has been so far away from my mind right now. I haven't even been thinking about like anything really, other than maybe trying to find some time to shed hunt. But before we get into whatever it is we're going to talk about today, I'm going to send a huge shout out to our partner over at Code Blue Scents. If you are looking for any type of real or synthetic deer urines, if you're looking for scent elimination products like field sprays or laundry detergents or body washes, things that are going to keep you clean and scent free, and then me and Jason, we love the Rope-A-Dope Mock Scrape Kit that probably here in March, I'm going to be actually going to freshen it up. I've been doing a lot of listening to guys who run mock scrapes all year long, and they seem to think, I don't see it quite yet, but they seem to think that it actually keeps deer on properties just from a I need to check in on this point standpoint. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, it's been a while since I've been over here to this hub scrape or whatever you want to call it. It might be something that just keeps deer checking in on your property. So, go visit codebluescents.com, discount code NFC, 20. No, I'm sorry. It's not NFC.
HTH.
HTH. Code, or the code blue scent to get 20% off is HTH20. So there's that.
I want to add to that real quick. And that's why I started to run my cell cameras year round is on those scrapes, because I do think there is something to that, because there are does especially that check in on that. You know, and I don't know if it's a territory thing. You know, like if you let your dog loose and then they've smelled a coyote or another dog, they'll mark their territory. If it's that, or if it's just the simple fact it's like a like a signpost, you know, they're cruising by and they just got to check in.
Yeah. I think I was talking to a wildlife biologist a handful of years ago, and they said that deer can smell like we can see. All right. Meaning they're able to break down whatever it is. So if I'm across the road from you and I see you, I can go, ooh, dude, that's Jason. But because all deer look the same, it would be hard to tell. So you got to have other indicators, right? So you would need to have a scent profile. And from my understanding, every deer has a different scent profile. And they're able to be like, oh, Fred was here. Oh, Janet was here. Oh, whatever was here. And then they can keep in touch that way,
right,
by scent. So they're able to individualize other deer by scent.
Yeah, I think that's definitely a thing. Because, I mean, if you walked into my house and you did it religiously, you would know that our house smells a certain way, so we smell a certain way. Same if I walked into your house. I remember back in high school, I had one of my best friends told me, he's like, oh, no, you Thibodeaux just have that smell, you know? So, like, do you take that?
I hope that's a good.
Yeah, like, do you take that in a bad way, or you know, how do you take that? You know, but there is some truth to it, because I mean, like, if you have a friend that has cattle, you know, they're gonna smell like cattle or hogs, you know, or if they have a fireplace in their house and they're wood burning. I mean, there are things that definitely. So I would say deer, especially with their senses. I mean, absolutely, they can pinpoint what it is. So
yeah, I've always been really impressed with. I don't know, man. The thing I have always been interested in is how deer, and we talk about this before, I've talked about it a lot in depth, but a very long time ago, I wrote an article about how deer can be able to judge threats by potency of scent, right? Mm-hmm. And we talked about this. But it's funny how there's times when, let's just say I'll walk, and I used to realize this when I was taking the easy way into a tree stand, and I didn't feel like looping around that day, and I just would walk straight to my stand, and I had maybe a really bad access route. I didn't care. And I'd walk through, and some deer would catch that ground scent and they would get freaked out. But other deer, maybe even that would come before it, would sniff it and become curious by it, or it wouldn't bother them at all. And I just was like, why do some deer allow things to go down? And other deer are like, eh, like they get worked up about it and then they put their tails up and they run away.
I mean, do you think it's the fact that maybe some of those deer have been spooked from a tree stand and then they correlated that spook with the smell?
I mean, I'm sure, right? But what I don't understand is it's just a huge difference. I mean, and it's obviously it's behavior, right? Because a big mature doe, I don't care where you're at in the country, a big mature old doe doesn't take crap. Like, no. She'll sit, like, I have a farm, even in Iowa, where if my access point is bad and she's there, there's like three doe groups that live along, they kind of intertwine on this 80 acres. Dude, if she catches anything she doesn't like, she'll blow and blow and blow and blow until you are ready to get out of the tree stand, right? And she won't come in. But here's the other crazy part. It's almost like the boy who cried wolf, where the rest of the deer herd hears her just continuously blow all the time. So now they're used to it and they don't see a threat. They don't smell a threat.
Right.
And they just go about their business. Have you ever seen that too happen too?
Yeah. And I mean, well, correlate it with, so I mean, a mature buck and a mature doe are two different animals, you know, and when you're hunting in or around both of those, the mature buck is going to act a lot different. I mean, he's going to come out to the edge of the field and, you know, do the look around and everything. But there's a time of year where he drops more of his guard than that doe ever will in her lifetime, right. You know, but then go ahead and spook that buck versus spooking that doe. They spook that buck. I mean, he's just going to run off, you right. know, it's not like it. And a lot of times that runoff might not even be that far.
Right. Right. Yeah. And they just bump a little bit. They probably stand up. They probably try to get good wind for wherever they hear a noise or right. like in farm country, dude, these deer will just stand up. They'll move off. And then it's, I've seen it happen where I'll drive a truck to go check a trail camera and I'll pull up next to a bedding area. I'll get out. I'll go check the trail camera. I'll come back. I'll drive 20 minutes later.
Right.
You know, a buck, whether they hear the truck or they're in their bedding area or not, they just soft bump and then they come back in relatively quick time.
So I guess my question, like thinking about this would be, so peak of the rut in, you know, a buck is on a estrus doe, just say, if you spooked both of those deer, a mature doe and a mature buck, which one do you think is more apt to come back to that area first?
Well, I mean, the buck, if it's the breeding season, the buck's going to go where the doe goes.
Yeah.
Right. I have literally walked by from me to my window, 2-year-old, 3-year-old bucks that have been locked down on a doe and they did not want to leave.
No.
And they just stayed right there and they watched me. I could have shot them easy. Yeah. This happened last year too. I was getting out of my tree stand and there was a doe. In this little crick, just kind of almost like trying to hide from this buck, but he was there and he just stood right there. I could have shot him at 30 yards from the ground. And I was like, no, it blows my mind the mental shift that happens. And it's almost like in the rut time frame, bucks get dumber and they, whether they smell you, they only have one thing on their mind. Great. But then does seem to be on higher alert in the rut than I would say in October, where if they know it's not breeding season, they know they don't have anything chasing them in the woods, unless they directly hit them with a full nose or something, they're more relaxed. This time of year, you're going to find me jigging for crappies off my father-in-law's boat, celebrating a successful turkey hunt, or just sitting on the back deck watching time go by with a quality cigar from Thompson Cigar. Thompson Cigar has been around since 1915, offering the widest array of cigars and cigar accessories at very affordable prices. Thompson Cigar offers your favorite brands like Swisher Sweets, Cohiba, Backwoods, and Monte Cristo shipped fresh directly to your door. Also, be sure to check out their 5-pack fever deals and join their value club for big savings. Visit thompsoncigar.com and enter the discount code SE at checkout for 20% off of all orders over $75. Thompson Cigar, quality cigars at affordable prices. Bow hunters are some of the hardest working hunters there are. Most of us work hard all year long just to get a couple weekends or burn our vacation time to sit in a tree. And just like the American blue-collar worker, we're trying to balance work, family, faith, and a little time for ourselves in the great outdoors. Now let me introduce you to Trollco Clothing, a brand built by blue-collar workers for blue-collar workers. Workwear, comfortable tees, hoodies and hats for both men and women, Trollco represents the hardworking American. So whether you're operating heavy equipment, wrenching on engines, or in a factory living that shift life, Trollco has your back, literally. Head to trollco.com/hunting. That's trollco.com/hunting and enter the discount code Empire25 for 25% off of your first order. Trollco, for the hardworking American.
Right. Yeah. Do you think they go on high alert because it's more of they're getting chased by multiple bucks, or the fact that they've had to let their fawns go for a minute while they're in estrus. Is Mother Nature, or does motherhood come in to factor there to where she's more protectant, or she's more like, I'm getting tired of being harassed?
Probably both, right? Yeah. She's looking for her doe or her fawn, which she's not going to find until she's bred. That along with, I'm sure it pisses the does off that they're off their bed to food pattern and they don't want to be off of their bed. Because take a look at this, man. You want to talk about an animal that is extremely consistent. That's a doe group. They will go on a bed to food pattern every day of the year, unless what? The food runs out and they got to shift that, or they're getting chased by a buck.
A buck or a human or a predator of some sort. Yeah.
Yeah. No. But ultimately, they're in that spot for a reason, because it's safe, and then they'll come back to that. Right. Yeah. But I'm going just like unpressured. Let's just say it's 100% unpressured. They're very consistent. Now, a white-tailed buck, once he goes hard horn, he starts his loops. Right. They even say that white-tailed bucks have something that they call an excursion throughout the year, where they take two or three trips, just 2 miles in one direction. You have no idea where or why. They're just checking out. And I'm guessing it has to do with, they're probably smelling to see what other deer are there. And they're checking out other deer herds to see, okay, maybe there's a doe group here I should come check out if things get bad enough. Or, hey man, I ran into a monster and I don't want to come back here during the rut because he'll kick my ass, you know, those types of things. Yeah. But those are the things that I think about, because that's led me to hunt doe groups and not individual bucks.
Right.
And I do that because I like to see deer. I like being late October, early November is my favorite time to be in the tree.
Yeah.
And I'm not trying to, you know, pattern a mature, you know, a big buck during the first week of the season when it's potentially 75, 80 degrees outside.
Yeah. I stack my deck too. You know, I mean, look at what we just said. It's, you know, a buck's going to drop his guard during the rut and everything, and you're stacking the odds of hunting around a doe group when something, one of them is going to come into estrus. You know that there's going to be activity. The gray area with it is you could have two or three different bucks that you're targeting in that time frame, but they could completely be off of your farm, you know? So you may not hit your target buck. You may hit another one that comes in. That's the only thing I would say with that. You know, if you're trying to be strategic wise, hunting a mature buck individually can be one of the most difficult things to do, especially if you don't have much for acreage, you know, in your area.
Yeah. Yeah. I will say this too. And maybe this is part of this conversation. Maybe it's not. I had a conversation yesterday with a guy who is brand new to bow hunting, brand new. And he said he's going to start looking for big mature bulls. Right. And that was in this conversation.
Okay.
Big mature. He said he wants a big elk. Bull elk. And I'm like, good luck, buddy. Right off the bat, good luck. Right.
Yeah.
Especially if you're traveling like we travel for elk.
Right.
But there's so many times that I think the worst thing to do, because this happened to me. I went right from being a bow hunter, and I've had a bow since 1994, and I've, you know, when I was 14 years old, 13, even shit, maybe even 92. Holy shit. Since 1992, and I've been shooting and trying to kill deer every year, since then. But starting to go, I think this is a huge mistake, especially for new hunters, trying to go after, mature whitetails right away is a mistake. Like, I feel like for me, that caused me more problems than it did actually going out and going through like a big, it's brown, it's down phase.
Yeah. I mean, I'll piggyback on that. So I had to take my first, first deer ever mm-hmm. that I shot. I had to take them off the wall the other day because we had a new window installed. Well, mm-hmm. as I took it down, I went and put it in storage in the basement for now. And I was kind of reminiscing about that hunt. And we talked about that hunt, I think it was last week. And yeah. I look back on it and I'm like, man, I hunted self-taught for 3 years before I pulled the trigger on anything. Now, I saw multiple deer that I could have shot, does, smaller bucks, and everything like that. And it just so happened that I shot a very, very nice buck, you know. And I remember guys back then, you used to have to take them to the check station. Guys are like, you'll never top that buck. That'll be the biggest buck you ever shoot. And in hindsight, the very next year, I regressed so drastically that I shot a little four-point buck. You know, yeah. and then I almost had to reclimb that ladder to get to that status. And it took me several years to shoot a buck of that caliber again.
Yeah.
And I saw to your point, if I would have spent my time from the get-go knowing that I was only going to trophy hunt, the odds of your success are one in every 5 years, mm-hmm. one in every, you know, if you're being self-taught and you're going into this with the mindset of you're going to hang something on the wall, more power to you. But I hope you have realistic expectations with it's not a slam dunk right away.
And, oh my God.
And to me, the process of it is so much more enjoyable if you learn the steps of it, learn the rungs of it. You know, that's why I've tried to teach my brother when I got him into it, and then my kids now that they've gotten into it, you know, their itch is for something bigger. Or their itch is for a buck, you know, and that has been, to me, eye-opening as far as that goes. So that'd be my advice for anybody just starting out.
Yeah. Man, I'm thinking back as listening to you say that. I'm thinking back now to 2007 and 8 and 9 and 10, all the way to probably, man, 14. Probably all the way up from 2007 to 2006 to 2014 in that time frame, dude, I was working hard for deer. And what I mean by that is I'm tearing up set, you know, because if you are trying to go after two deer on X number of acres, you got to move around a lot. Like, or you're either doing one of two things. You're either bouncing around a lot or you're holding off a lot.
Right.
And I chose not to hold off. I chose to find like three or four deer, and based off of whatever wind direction I had that night, I was going in with a mobile setup. And I was setting up on specific deer, on specific trails and specific terrain features. And that was tear up, set down, you know, tear up, set up, or tear down, set up, tear down, set up. And I was doing that every morning and every night. And, you know, this was back in the day when, you know, especially before being married and before kids, man, I was running and gunning for like 30 or 40 days of the season. It was stupid how much I was hunting. And if you asked me to do that now, dude, I'd be like, well, I think I'm just going to sit here in my truck and watch the sun come up, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and you'd be more strategic about it, you know? Yeah. So your selectiveness on when you'd be hunting, it'd be completely different. But I can rewind back to the same amount of time frame, you know, 05, 06, 07. Yeah. And, you know, I was hunting out of those summit climbers, and my goal was to be in and around deer. Like I was hunting deer. Yeah. I wasn't necessarily hunting target deer, but I remember back in 06, we'd gone down to Central Illinois, a buddy of mine and I, and we hunted for, I think it was 3 or 4 days. And then on the last evening, I ended up shooting I had decoyed a buck in, and it was a picture perfect hunt. You know, the buck lays his ears back and I end up smoking him broadside and he lays down in the field and dies. And my buddy comes up and he kind of looks at me and he does the hunter shame thing where he's like, he's an okay buck, you know? Yeah. And right away I'm like, I'm not devastated, but I'm like, really? I mean, I regressed from my first one. So my first one I shot was in 03. Well, I started hunting in 2000. So by 06, I still was working those rungs back up the other way, you know, because I realized that this was the biggest buck that I was, you know, in 03, that was the biggest buck I had ever seen at that point. And then let alone then the next year shoot these little dinkers and stuff, I was working the way back up. And I was almost hunter shamed because of not shooting something in somebody else's category.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I guess perspective wise, you know, everybody has different goals. I think it's just reality of it, too. You know, the more I've done this, and you know this, too, and this was something I thought about talking about here in the off season, was there's not land available.
No, like
there used to be, you know, so like an idea, you know, this off season is to go knock on doors. And how do you do that? Well, the knocking on door thing, I mean, even that, I don't want to say has become obsolete, but it's very tough, you know? So your odds or your options have become like stake ground and stuff. So for me, if I was to tell somebody, hey, you know, you're getting into hunting, whether it's elk or whitetail or whatever, I don't want to say lower your expectations, but I would just say start slow and enjoy the ride.
Right. Man, it was fun. I'll be honest, dude. I chased some giant whitetails. I even connected on what I consider a couple giant whitetails, right? Like, let's be honest. If you're shooting a 4-year-old, I don't care where you're at in this country. If you're able to connect on a 4-year-old in Iowa, like I'm just talking about my personal experience. And there's probably a lot of people out there who are listening to me going, oh, 4-year-old? I'm just talking about the environment that I have access to, right? 4-year-old, 140, a 140 class or higher 4-year-old is a great year. I mean, an exceptional year. I'm going to even back off that a little bit. And I shot maybe a 120, 125-ish. I don't even know what I don't score my deer. So I don't know. 3-year-old this year. I shot a 3-year-old buck probably in the mid 120s. And I had an absolute blast.
Yeah.
With that, with my hunting season, real. And I got him made into bologna, and I got him made into, you know, like I get a, everybody, every time I have people over. We had my daughter's 13th birthday this weekend, and the family came over, and I chopped up some ring sausage that I had made, ring salami. And everybody's like, oh, this is so good. Where'd you get it from? Blah, 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 blah. And I'm just like, hey, I shot this one with my bow at 19 yards, put a arrow through his lungs, watched him fall over. I got the head right here on this beautiful wood. Some guy made me an outline of Iowa.
Oh, cool.
And he put a Euro mount kit on it, and he sent it to me. And I'm like, dude, that's badass.
Yeah, that's
and
cool.
So my Euro mount hangs on that downstairs where I can look at it every day. So I get to eat this buck with my family. I get to, and it's just this thing where I've shot the big deer, and don't get me wrong, big deer are awesome and I love shooting them. But now, like, I don't know if I want to put in the energy to chase down the big boys anymore or dedicate the time to that anymore.
I can agree to some degree on that. Like I have found myself more, I guess, you know, when you were talking about your options, like, you know, when you're hunting two deer, you know, your options are to either bounce around or to be selective on when you hunt. I think the longer I've hunted, I've just become more selective. And what I've done in the process of that is I've introduced my kids, I've introduced other people into hunting, and I've tried to share it that way instead of my goal being I need a 170, I need a 200, and then just dedicating so much effort and time to that now, like this past fall, the buck that showed up was not a buck I had been watching, you know, but he showed up in October when the farmer was combining corn. And then as soon as I got pictures of him, like, he'd be a fun buck to chase. And just as luck would have it, you know, I selected my days, very few to hunt. And then I'm like, I'm going all in. And then I make this cool hunt out of using two decoys and everything. as luck would have it, he shows up, and I enjoy the whole process of it. Yes, he's a big buck, you know, but it wasn't the inches that got me on the hunt. Right. It was the fact that I had dedicated certain time and I was able to succeed that way.
Yeah.
So it could have been 120 inch buck that morning that came into those decoys and he probably would have got shot. You know, yeah. that's just, I mean, my point of it is sometimes we get so wrapped up in the inches and everything. And then we get wrapped up into dedicating seasons, you know, 30 right. days, 30 consecutive days and everything. And I think the reality of it is, especially without all the permission property, like there used to be, I mean, man, Dan, I used to be able to walk up and down the road and knock on a door and get permission. Or I used to call a buddy and say, hey, who owns this one or who owns that one? And I had, there was a time when I had a dozen different farms that I could hunt any given day.
Fact.
You know, so I literally could hunt every single day of the week and never pressure a property.
Yeah. Yeah. Dude, believe this, I probably had close to 3,000, 4,000 acres of prime hunting ground in Iowa to hunt from, and those are all gone, right?
Yeah.
So now, and it's unfortunate, but I have one of the landowners is in the nursing home now.
Yeah.
And who knows how long she's going to be there. And as soon as, you know, her time on earth, God bless her because she's an amazing person. Right. But as soon as her time is gone, that farm is getting sold to the highest bidder, right?
Yeah.
And then we have another guy who just, he just so happens to allow me to hunt his farm. I have to travel a long way for it, but I don't know what I'm going to do. I'm saving money to try to buy my own 5 acres. You know what I mean? Like, it's just, it just is extremely difficult, especially in Iowa, which is why I travel to hunt sometimes.
Yeah. Well, I mean, to your point, I've lost two of my favorite properties because of deaths, you know, and then they change hands or they moved on. I've got one, well, actually our biggest piece, the lady that owns it, she's upper 90s. I mean, she's probably 97, 98 years old. And when she passes, I would assume that the kids sell it, you know? Yeah. So, I mean, there's that too. So I may have to go back to the drawing board as far as that goes too, because my options are really running thin with properties. And so that's another thing with being selective. I don't have as much as I used to have, you know?
100%.
So I don't want to pressure the ground that I have, but.
Right. Well, and at the same time, like when I had the most acres to hunt, is also when I was chasing bigger deer because I had more options.
Right.
Now, not only do I have to share properties with the people that I, with other hunters, I have to, have to really have this debate now of where can I go to hunt? And I have some public ground near my home that usually you hear stories of one big buck getting shot there every year. I don't know if it's probably more luck than it is the guy, you know, like during the rut, some private piece nearby that had a little pocket in it, you know, guy came in and was able to do that. But, I don't know, man, I'm to a point now where I'm just very thankful that I even get the opportunity to be in a tree stand. Now here's the deal though. When I get older, and my kids are out of the house, and I'm hopefully still in good enough shape to go hunt more, I'm going to probably hunt more.
Yeah, and I'm not saying that I'm going backwards with that. I'm just saying selective time, you know, because kids are busy, work's busy, life's busy, you know. And I mean, to make the best out of it, you got to be very selective. And especially, you know this too. You go and schedule out of state hunts and everything, that takes time away from family, time away from your job, you know, and when you're doing weeks or 9-10 days at a time, that's a lot of your season that now you have to adjust according to that too.
Yep. Yep. So. Absolutely. Well, I know you got to get to class, my friend.
Yes, I do.
So good luck today. This was a really good BS session that we had this morning. If you guys could do us a huge favor, go to Spotify or iTunes or wherever you download the How to Hunt Deer podcast. Give us a 5-star review. Let us know in that review how we're doing. I would really appreciate it. Also, make sure you go subscribe to the How to Hunt Deer podcast on YouTube. Just subscribe to that. We're trying to get, I think it's 1,000 subscribers, which seems like a lot, okay. But if we get 1,000 subscribers, what happens is then we can, unlock some cool features in, in that platform that allows us to do some cool things. So go do that. Other than that, Jason, thanks for your time. Everybody have a good rest of your day, and we'll talk to you next week.